The bounty of agriculture is a mega-billion-dollar treasure sitting out in the open for everyone to see and for some to simply take. This taking of our bounty without paying leads us to ask, can the stealing be stopped?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 958th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Giza Village who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Or whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Aaron, hello there.
Well, hello.
Aaron, do you think it's possible to stop the stealing?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do.
All right, folks, imagine taking all the gold in Fort Knox and stacking it up next to the road for all to see. Pretty ridiculous notion, right? I mean, if we did actually do that, someone would be certain to come along and steal all the gold. That pile of Fort Knox gold would pale in value if it was compared to the bounty of agriculture, which in fact is a mega billion and maybe even trillion dollar treasure sitting unguarded out in the open for all to see and for some to simply take. The soaring value of agricultural commodities and infrastructure is spawning an army of thieves throughout agriculture's fields of plenty, from the fumbling drug addicts who strip the copper wire from well pumps to the calculating teams of truckers who drive off with $100,000 loads of nuts. Those who farm must fend off this army of thieves or lose control of their farms and our food. This fight over the bounty of agriculture leads us to ask, can the stealing be stopped? Well, who better to ask than the person who fights the thieves himself? Let's ask Sergeant Michael Chapman from the Fresno County Ag Task Force. What do you think? Can the stealing be stopped?
It can be stopped or at the very least significantly slowed down, but this is something that you cannot simply rely on law enforcement alone to do. It's going to take participation with all of our partners in the ag community.
Everybody has to pay attention here. Well, to get to know you a little bit, you're the sergeant with the Fresno County Agriculture. Tell us a little bit about, for those of us who are listening around the country, probably, yeah, everybody's probably heard of Fresno County, but not too many people know how big a part Fresno County plays in the food we eat.
Well, Fresno County plays a significant part in feeding the nation and feeding the world. Fresno County is the fourth largest county in the state of California. However, Fresno County is the number one county in the nation, not just the state, but the nation in agri-dollars production. Last year, in 2013, we did $6.8 billion just in Fresno County in producing food.
$6.8 billion. It really is like a treasure sitting out there for everybody to see, isn't it?
I really like your analogy of the Fort Knox. One of my responsibilities as the sergeant is to travel and to educate people the best we can. And that's actually, I thought it was just so coincidental, it's the same analogy that I use. If you had money in a bank and you let the doors of the bank open at night with the money stacked on the counter, would the money still be there when you come back? No, we need to lock it in the vault. Fresno County, like I said, is the largest producer. About 14 years or so ago, 15 years ago, there was some grant money available throughout the state to form ag crimes prevention units and ag crimes investigations units. The grant ran its course and basically the money went away. Our sheriff, Margaret Mims, places a high value on ag crime investigation and prevention. So we're one of the few counties that still has a fully staffed ag task force. We have our task force is basically comprised of a lieutenant, myself, six deputies, and a CHP officer, as well as a deputy district attorney. One of the challenges that law enforcement faces these days is jail overcrowding. the course being slow.
Yeah, all kinds of obstacles for to you, right? To prevent you or to hinder you from doing your job. Well, you know, Sergeant, when regular people, city people, are driving out in the country, they see the bucolic nature of agriculture. You know, they see the beautiful farms and the cows mooing in their pasture and whatnot. But if you're a thief out there driving down the road, you see a lot of opportunity because agriculture really is out in front of everybody to see.
One of the challenges that we face. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, what are some, if you're a thief, how do you see these things? I mean, what opportunities do you see there to steal things and turn it into money?
Well, there's two basic types of thieves, and you've already alluded to them in your intro. There's the people who are hooked on illegal drugs that are going out and they're stealing copper or they're stealing metal, they're stealing iron, they're stealing anything that isn't nailed down, and they're taking it and they're converting that into money, which they convert into drugs. The other type of criminal are the ones that are more sophisticated, that are targeting specifically large portions of produce or equipment fertilized, stuff like that, ag chemicals that they're able to sell to other unscrupulous farmers or growers.
So they're more targeted. The druggies are kind of like locusts, right? They just come through and kind of strip the land of anything that is that's of value.
Yeah, 20 years ago, you had to worry about your house getting broken into while you were gone at work. They would come, they would steal your VCR or your microwave, and they would sell it for pennies on the dollar. 15 years ago, they would, if you lived in a rural area, they would steal your mail and they would do identity theft. 10 years ago, they realized that there's just all this metal out there. What drives the theft of scrap metal, or the theft of metal, rather, is the price of scrap that the recyclers pay. And it's been real easy to demonize the recycling yards that, when in reality, are legitimate businesses. We have kind of worked really hard in the past 6 years to form a good partnership with the metal yards locally, so that when someone brings something in that is suspicious, they're one of the first ones to call us.
So it's almost almost all of the implements of agriculture are metal.
Yes, and the nature of agriculture is, you know, if you drove your car to work and then you drove it home and you had a garage and you had a driveway or you had a secured yard, you wouldn't probably leave your car sitting out in the middle of the street with the keys in the ignition. The nature of farming is such that it's not practical to bring that tractor 20 miles back to your shop to lock it up. You're going to leave it in the field where you got through using it last, because you're going to have a worker that's going to show up at 6 o'clock in the morning. If you go around passing out keys to people, then they're losing productivity time, and no one would ever steal a tractor, right? I mean, they only cost, some of them cost $100,000. A cheap tractor is $20,000. So the nature of it is, you're not going to take that huge plow back to the shop and lock it up. You're going to leave it in the field, and all this stuff is metal. And the crooks that steal this, they work very hard at being crooks. I mean, they'll have very elaborate theft devices, trailers with winches and cutting torches, and they'll go into the field and they'll cut the equipment up there, or they'll steal the equipment if they can and move it, take it to a different spot, cut it into scrap, and then take it to the scrap yards.
Wow. Let me ask you the most silly question that I've ever thought of asking anybody, but I think that I have to ask it for what comes later. And that is, what if they get away with it? What if we quit fighting them and just let them get away with it? What happens to agriculture?
Well, you're kind of seeing it now with the water shortage. It's just not economically sound to farm right now, because you can't get water, or you're going to have to pay exorbitant amount for the water, so it goes dormant. If theft in agriculture was unchecked, then it just wouldn't become profitable to farm, and people would stop farming. You know,
what happens if people stop farming?
This is what happens. We cringe every time we go fill up our vehicles at the gas station, and we're paying this huge amount for a gallon of gasoline. Well, a lot of that is because of overregulation in the gas industry, but the bigger part is we're buying foreign oil. You know, we're buying foreign oil. They can charge us what they want. This is passing the cost on it. This is just for gasoline. If we stop farming in the United States, if we make it where it's unpopular or whether it's not economically sound to farm in the United States, we're going to be buying foreign food. Do you think foreign gasoline is expensive? Wait till we start buying foreign bread.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. We're talking about stealing our agriculture, and can we stop that theft? Today we're talking with Sergeant Mike Chapman, who is in charge of the Fresno County Ag Task Force. $7 billion treasure sitting out there in the open for everybody to see and some to take. Questions we're working with today is, why are farmers inherently vulnerable to theft? How do thieves take advantage of agriculture's vulnerability? And can the stealing of agriculture's bounty somehow be stopped? Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Have you been the victim of theft? What did they take out there in your fields? Pick up your phone and give us a ring. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Sergeant Mike Chapman. And you do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
If you think about it, as a city person, life looks pretty good out in the countryside, does it not? You drive out for a Sunday drive and you drive into the beautiful countryside and you see those bucolic farms and you see the cows mooing around in their fields and you think, what a great life to be a farmer. But if you really knew what farming was about, you would know that farmers have to be the great contenders. They have to fight for everything that they grow. And they have to contend with just about everything that wants that growth. They have to contend with nature. They have to contend with weeds that want to steal all of the nutrients from the soil and all the sunshine. They have to contend with bugs and insects and animals that want to eat the crop itself. Everything wants what's growing. And so the farmer must contend with everything for that growth. One of the worst pests to emerge recently, it seems, perhaps all, or they were always there, there were always cattle rustlers and whatnot, but it seems like ag theft by people is really coming to the fore, and I think it has a lot to do with the value of crops going through the roof. Do you think that has made a big difference, Sergeant Chapman?
The nature of farming, you know, is such that it's just a really soft target for crooks. If you think about, you know, we go back to the analogy of your house getting broken into. You leave for work at 7 in the morning, you lock the house up, you come home at 5 in the evening, you know, the back door is broken in, your TV's gone, or your jewelry box or whatever. Law enforcement shows up, they know that this crime happened between 7 and 5. They walk around your neighborhood, they knock on doors, they interview a neighbor that might have saw a vehicle, they get a description, and they have an investigatable lead to start moving on. In farming, especially in the equipment theft or in metal theft, because of the nature of it, you may not realize that theft has occurred for a month, maybe 3 months. You leave a piece of equipment in the field or a pump is inoperable during the wet season or whenever you're not irrigating. You go back to energize that pump and there's no wires in it. How do you know where to start the investigation? It happened sometime, I think it worked in June, and here it is October, and now my wind machines don't work. Where do we start the investigation? Any physical evidence is long gone. There are no neighbors out there to go knock on the doors and say, hey, did you see anything suspicious over the last 6 months in this farm field. You know, it's just not practical to investigate it that way. So it goes back to, you know, we kind of have a three-prong approach to investigating ag crimes. You know, the first prong is a traditional detective thing where we get reports.
Could we hold that off for just a little bit? I'd like to continue on this track here about the vulnerability, intrinsic vulnerability of agriculture, especially for those of us who live in the city. That there seems to be two targets out there in the fields. One is the infrastructure, and the other are the commodities themselves. I have here a newspaper in front of me that talks about how, you know, the druggies seem to be, you know, stripping of infrastructure, and the more practiced thieves, or the more deliberate thieves, I guess it would be, are going after big, you know, big value crops like truckloads of processed nuts for that, you know, are worth $100,000. So let's talk a little bit about the infrastructure of agriculture itself, so that people realize that what they see out there, that bucolic countryside, is really quite valuable. And one of the places that we really don't think a lot about is the metals and the copper wires and all of those things that make a production system work.
Yes, you know, one of the challenges of fighting that is, besides the long time the crime goes unreported, metal that is recycled is turned over very quickly. Metal that is stolen today will be at the recyclers tomorrow, and 2 or 3 days will be on in a container headed to China. Metal is hard to identify, especially if copper wires have the casing removed or an implement that has been cut into 4-foot-long sections. It's hard to determine who it belongs to. If you don't have a victim, you don't have a crime. So that's one of the challenges we face. You go to the metal yard and you look at a piece of metal, how do you know who it belongs to? If you're not reporting, you know, if you're not able to discover the crime in a timely fashion, by the time you report it, that metal is probably already, you know, on a foreign shore.
And why a foreign shore?
That's where what drives metal theft is the price for scrap metal. And Asia is the number one buyer of scrap metal. Mm-hmm. So you can look at the kind of the gold standard in scrap metal, as they call it, bright and shiny copper, which is basically copper wiring with the casing removed or the insulation removed. And whenever it reaches anything over $2 a pound, and it's like between $2 and $3 a pound now, the price fluctuates daily. That kind of drives the theft. And you look at number one scrap steel, which is basically ferrous metal. If a magnet will stick to it, it's ferrous, cut into 4-foot lengths. They're paying well over $100 a ton for that. So,
wow. Of course,
we'll work all day to get a pickup bed of scrap iron that they'll get 30 or 40, 50 bucks for. And just kind of the cycle starts over again. They'll get paid for that. They'll go buy drugs. They'll use the drugs. They'll go out and they'll steal more metal. The next day, they're back selling it again.
Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask is agriculture and the cities are kind of like growing together. So we have, you know, a situation, especially in Fresno County, you have a significant metropolitan area right smack dab in the nation's most productive agricultural county. So you have a lot of city people and a lot of agriculture. And in that city, you know, they, like all cities, you're dealing with a significant drug problem. Have you seen an escalation in the theft of infrastructure, you know, kind of paralleling the increase in use of drugs?
Yes. Drugs are what drive theft. If you have a drug problem, you're going to have a theft problem. If you have a theft problem, you have a drug problem. You cannot have one without the other. Other thefts occur, but it's usually like a crime of convenience. But the majority of thefts are by drugs.
And let's turn now to the commodities. You know, the big commodities like truckloads of nuts going in that are worth $100,000. These seem to be more deliberate kind of thefts to me. It doesn't seem like, you know, a druggie, you know, crawling out of the out of his pad, you know, and driving out into the country is going to be able to do something like stealing a truckload of nuts. Who's doing that?
Well, that's usually organized crime, actually. What happens is the internet is a wonderful thing. If you're a truck driver and you brought a load of cargo from the East Coast to the West Coast, and now you're going to return home. You don't want to drive home with an empty truck. So you go to an internet forum called a message board, and you look at that message board to find someone who wants to ship something to the East Coast, so you're able to make freight both ways. What the crooks are doing is they're going and they're looking at this message board, and they're figuring out something that is a high-value crop, like nuts or televisions or, you know, something with a high value. They're posing as a legitimate trucking firm, giving that legitimate trucking firm's business. They go to the victim, pick up a load, they give this fictitious information, and they drive away with the victim's, you know, years of work of crops on their set of doubles behind their truck tractor, and it goes to the Los Angeles area, it goes to the docks, and it is gone.
Away it goes, to probably the same place all the scrap metal goes.
We feed the world, so it goes a variety of places, but usually it's shipped abroad.
Well, we have a short minute here left before we go to a break, but when we come back, I'd like to ask Sergeant Mike Chapman, Fresno County Ag Task Force, to introduce us to some of the thieves that he has met along the way and to tell us about how they go about their business so those of us who live in the city can understand better what agriculture goes through to hold itself together. Ladies and gentlemen, if agriculture does not hold itself together and prevent these thefts, farmers will simply go out of business. And if farmers go out of business, where will we get our food? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about theft in agriculture. How do we catch the thieves? Can we stop the thievery? Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. I'd like to hear from you. Pick up your phone and join us. Michael Olson, Mike Chapman, and you. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, who do you think is doing all the stealing? Well, I bet Sergeant Mike Chapman knows, because he is in charge of the Fresno County Ag Task Force. Sergeant, who is it that's doing all the stealing out there?
You know, the profile of an ag crook just crosses every. They're male, they're female, they're of every race, they're of every age. There's just anyone who is susceptible to the addiction of drugs is potentially an ag thief.
Wow, so it just really is drugs. We're going to go quickly to the phones and talk with Lee. Lee, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Program.
Good morning, gentlemen. I in the sports hunting stores, I believe you can find it, or publications, they have these, they're hangable camera with a memory bank. And then they're set off by infrared or motion.
Wildlife cameras.
Yeah. And I think that somebody that has equipment or produce that they're concerned about, they have to think outside the box. They have to catch them. If they bring a pitcher to the sheriff, that would give you power to work with?
Sergeant?
Yes, it does. What it comes down to is there's three basic approaches to it. One of the solutions to solving ag crime is that unfortunately the farmer, the rancher, the grower has to take steps on their own. They have to be smart enough to secure their property. The video surveillance is one of the ways, one of the great tools that we use. We have those cameras ourselves that we place out in the field. We encourage farmers to buy them themselves. One of the things about it is simply a picture of someone walking away is of little value. I can predict right now that it's going to be a male about 5'7", 5'8", with a dark hoodie on, and you know, we're not going to be able to do much with that. What we do is we educate the farmer, the rancher, the grower, when they place these cameras, to put them in such a way that we capture the vehicle. A picture of a dark person, dark subject walking across, a shadowy person walking across your shop, doesn't really have much value to us. We place it out on the egress, out on the roads near your property, and we catch the license plate coming in. Now we have an investigatable beginning for it.
Wow.
Great, great tool.
All right, Lee, got a follow-up?
Thank you.
All right, good. There goes Lee. Thanks for the tuning in. Quick question. What is your favorite crook? I'm sure that you have favorites because you've probably caught a bunch of people out there. Tell us about your favorite thief.
The dumb ones. They're my favorite. What we'll do is we'll go to the metal yards, and what we look for, the crooks are coming in to recycle metal. We can't arrest them for the metal they have necessarily. Sometimes we're able to because we can find the owner, but more often than not, it's cut up, we can't identify it. So we arrest them for drug charges. We arrest them for weapons charges. We arrest them for warrants. We tow their vehicles, whatever we can to do to arrest them for associated crimes with metal theft and with drugs. It works well. One of our tricks is to, and I hope the crooks aren't listening to this, I'm giving away one of our favorite tricks, is that we drive undercover vehicles with hidden lights in them. And we'll park one of those vehicles near a recycling yard, and we'll turn the lights on so that the back lights are flashing. I'm sure you've driven down the road, seen law enforcement with the back caution lights flashing. And then that person that drives that vehicle will get into another undercover slash ag vehicle with another detective, and they'll go sit down the street without the lights on. Now we watch the scrapper people come in, and the ones that slow down and turn in and go into the recycling area, we don't worry about. The ones that slow down, start to turn in, see the law enforcement vehicle flashing lights, decide not to turn in and take off, that's the one we want. And more often, just every time we pull them over, we've got something to arrest them for. So it's just a great, it's kind of like a reverse decoy is what it is. You know, if you duck hunt or anything like that, you've seen duck hunting on tires, they have all the little decoys out there floating around and to draw, you know, the ducks in. Well, this is a reverse decoy. We put it there to see, you know, the crooks flare off of it. It's like, that's the one we want.
Well, you know, and with all due respects, when you're going after druggies, they're probably not all that intelligent to begin with, and then whatever intelligence they had to start with is not much left by the time they've done all the drugs. I mean, not a nice thing to say, but
that's pretty accurate. But you know, you got to remember too that you know drug addiction crosses all lines. It crosses all race lines. It crosses gender lines. It crosses class lines. So you could have someone that's incredibly intelligent. You know, it's like anything else in life. There's a natural selection, and the dumb ones die first, or not necessarily figuratively die first, but they get caught first. The tougher ones, the smarter ones, are you got to put a lot of work into that.
Well, tell me about the smart ones. Tell me about some of the smart ones you've run across.
The really smart ones are the ones that are stealing, you know, the $200,000 worth of processed almonds. They're the ones that already have something set up. That they're the ones that have ties out into a variety of communities that are feeding them information about whenever they're getting deliveries of ag chemicals that are high dollar items. That whenever, hey, you know, the shop's unlocked and no one's around during this time, if you want to come in and steal $60,000 worth of tools, this is the time to do it. And they're the ones that aren't just going out and stealing and then looking for, you know, a place to fence the stolen property. These are people that already have standing orders for equipment, and they're going out and saying, hey, you need a, you know, a 1075 Mudder John Deere tractor? Yeah, we'll go steal that for you. We'll go find their filling orders, basically. Those are the tough ones to catch.
And tell us about one or two that you've caught. Just introduce them to us so that we can kind of get a picture of them.
Well, this goes back to our partnership with the ag industry and agriculture having to be smarter about how they do business. Securing their property is, of course, what we want to plug that all the time. Secure your property, deny access, control access, mark your property. But the other side of that is reporting stuff that's suspicious. And the great cases that we've made have been because a farmer sees something that doesn't really belong. I mean, you know, no one knows better what belongs in your property than you or around your property. And they call us, and we're able to follow up on that, and we just kind of dumb luck into a big investigation that ends up, you know, netting a lot. We had one where this person says, you know, these guys are coming around, they're trying to sell ag chemical that doesn't look quite right. We're able to track them down. This was a multi-county. We actually ended up serving some search warrants over in Santa Cruz County on it and then Monterey County, and we went down to the border and arrested some folks as they were trying to sneak stolen ag chemicals across the border. So, again, it goes back to that one farmer, that one rancher that saw something. That says, hey, this just doesn't look quite right.
So somebody came to him and was trying to sell him ag chemicals, and the guy said, there's something not quite right here.
Yeah, it doesn't go that way, yeah.
If the deal is this good, there has to be something wrong with it. Ag chemicals, another target for thieves, right?
Yes, that has been a long-standing target for ag crooks, is that there's a big market. You know, if you think about it, if you want to buy groceries, you go to Ralph's. And you don't like the price of Ralph's, you go to Save Mart. You don't like the price of Save Mart, you go to some other store. With ag chemicals, in the past, at least, there was one place you bought them from. So they control the pricing. This is what you paid. You know, ag is going good. It's like, yeah, we had to pay a lot of money for Roundup, and that's what we'll pay for it. So there's a large demand at a narrow supply market.
And it's all in a little shed out back with a little tiny padlock. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Sergeant Mike Chapman of the Fresno County Ag Task Force. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. When we come back, how do we stop the thieves? This is the Food Chain. I read an interesting story about some melon farmers in China. This happened a few years ago. They were worked hard for the entire year. They grew their melons, and just as the melons ripened in the fields, people from the nearby city swarmed out and stole all the melons. Gone, just like that. A whole year's worth of melon farming up in smoke, as it were. Now, it might seem impossible for something like that to happen right here in the good old United States of America, but in a way, it is happening right here in the good old U.S. of A. As those in the city who are craving drugs or whatnot and in dire need of a fix swarm out into the country and steal all of the infrastructure that makes a production system possible. The electric wires, the metal, the plows, the shears, anything that has any value disappears. Can we stop this thievery? Mike Chapman, you're in charge of stopping the thievery, but it's not just you, is it?
No, we can't do this alone. We have to all work together on this, and it sounds kind of cliche, but it is the most valuable tool that we have in fighting ag crime is crime prevention itself. The best way to stop crime is to prevent it from happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, predators always go for weakness, you know, because they don't want to be wounded in the process of taking. So they always look for weakness. What is a weakness that you caution farmers about?
If they could just do one thing, it would be to mark their property. You know, we get or record the serial numbers on their tractors. We come across property that we really believe is stolen. But without a victim, we can't prosecute the people. If we had some way of knowing who it belonged to, then it would be much easier for us to pursue it criminally. The second thing, and a really close second, too, is control access to your property. If you leave your vineyard rows or your farm lanes open, anyone can drive into them, and everyone will that wants to steal.
What about the night?
Most of the ag crimes are occurring at night. Some of it occurs during the day, but the majority of it occurs at night. You have a much less populated area out there at night. You still have some farm operations going at night, irrigating and spraying for, you know, some spraying occurs at night, but the vast majority of it occurs during the daytime, plus you can't see at night, so that's when the crime is occurring. Large operations have found that it's one of the good tools is to privatize and to have security patrols that go out, and if they don't at least catch the people stealing, they, you know, scare them away so that they don't steal from that facility. The main thing is controlling access, so putting up cables across access points or gates, or you know, locking your shop up, taking keys out of equipment, securing equipment whenever it's not needed.
It's kind of the same as leaving the back door unlocked on your house.
You can't be surprised when your TV's gone.
There you go. And one of the nut farmers I talked to with respect to this activity talked a lot about lights and cameras, like a previous caller was talking about. If you can use cameras and have lights, if your facilities are lighted up, or if you have motion detectors, there seems to be all kinds of devices you can use now.
Well, you know, technology is a great thing, and unfortunately, sometimes agriculture is one of the last ones to embrace the technology. If you think about tracking units now, you know, you can get them for a couple $100s. You know, and the service is $20-$30 a month to have this, and you can place these tracking units in your high value equipment. And if they are stolen, we've made huge cases on this where the farmers, whenever they buy a new piece of equipment, they go ahead and spend a little bit of extra money. I believe they're probably getting a break on some of their insurance by doing that. It gets stolen, well, we're able to go right to it. We have portable temporary tracking devices that we use. We primarily use them as baiting operations where we'll put a piece of equipment on visible from the roadway, but on private property, with the expectation it's going to get stolen. This is our second favorite crook to go knock on the door, like, hey, do you have something that doesn't belong to you? No, not us. Like, well, you know, let me tell you a story. I got a computer that's pointing a, you know, an indicator that right here, that in your backyard is a stolen piece of equipment. You want to tell me about that? You know, that is just so, such an inexpensive crime-fighting tool for the farmer, grower, rancher to use.
Especially if you have a piece of equipment that's worth a lot of money, yes. I would think insurance companies would be bending over backwards to encourage that.
Yeah, you have to be smart. I mean, we had one set of trailers loaded with walnuts that were ready to go to the processor on a Friday. It's a couple-hour drive to the processor. They're backed up. Oh, we'll take it on Monday. So they leave, you know, and they're going to load the walnuts, of course. They're going to leave them in the trailer. The trailer's hooked to the tractor. The tractor is parked on the side of the road, and the keys are left in the ignition. And they come back Monday, and it's like, well, someone must have taken that. About Tuesday, did you take that? No, I thought you took it. Wednesday, they call and say, someone stole our stuff. Well, oh, my gosh, how did this happen? We got really fortunate on that because, you know, the President Sheriff's Act Task Force belongs to a larger task force called the California Rural Crime Prevention Task Force that has about 48 counties in the state and numerous state and even some federal enforcement people involved in it. We have an email network that we send out, hey, if you come across this, you know, let us know. Turns up in neighboring county, in Tulare County, a walnut processor says, hey, this guy came in, wanted to sell some walnuts really cheap, didn't sound right, he called.
And there it is. Folks, I think I lost him there for a minute. Maybe we'll pick him up and call again. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson. We are talking with Sergeant Mike Chapman, and we'll have to call him back. And he is the sergeant in charge of the Fresno County Ag Task Force, and we're going to ask him the big question when we get back, which is, what happens when we catch a thief? Do we prosecute them, or do we let them go? And if we let them go, then what? Right back. Well, I opened this edition of the Food Chain Radio Program with what I thought must be one of the most silliest questions I've ever asked anyone, which is, what would happen if the thieves got away with it? If they stole our farm infrastructure, if they stole our crop commodities, what would happen? Well, the obvious answer, of course, is that people would quit farming. And if people quit farming, we'd have to buy our food from other countries or starve. So pretty dire consequences. So what happens when we do catch the thieves? Do we do something with them, Sergeant Mike?
We're real fortunate in Fresno County is that our DA, Beth Egan, supports our efforts. She's assigned a deputy district attorney to us, so we have vertical prosecution. And what that does, it gives us accountability to the DA and the DA to us that, you know, no cases are returned because there's not enough evidence. No cases fall through the cracks. The challenge that we have that everyone faces right now is jail overcrowding and the courts running at a slow pace, the prisons being overcrowded. And unfortunately, ag crime is not viewed with the importance that we view it as, because it's not a violent crime. So they're some of the first people to get released or oftentimes get the lightest sentences.
Well, that's kind of takes us back to our question, does it not? If we're not prosecuting, and we are prosecuting these people, we are, you know, taking them to court, and yet when we send them to jail, they don't last very long in jail because they're letting everybody out of the jails right now. So if there is no jail time, what disincentive do we have to offer? thieves.
There is none. And, you know, this is why radio programs like yours are so important, because it educates the general public that this is a serious thing. This isn't something, they stole some metal, or, the poor people this, or the poor people that. No, this is a serious crime. It's attacking not just the infrastructure of agriculture, but the infrastructure of America.
Stripping everything, kind of like locusts flying across the land, eating up everything green. When we catch them and we prosecute them and we put them in jail and they get out of jail right away, become addicts again, then are you seeing repeat offenders?
Oh, yes. And Fresno County is pretty large. Like I said, it's the fourth largest county in the state. There's probably not more than 30 people who are doing the vast majority of metal theft. I'm not talking ag theft. I'm just talking metal theft. People will go out and steal something if they see it. It's a crime of opportunity. But the ones who are on it day after day after day after day, you know, just ripping away the metal, there's only about 30 people of them. In 2013, we lost $1.3 million just in metal theft. Those people are the ones we need. If they're drug addicted people for the most part, or they're at least bad drug users, you know, if we need to get them in programs to change that behavior pattern, then that's what we need to do. If we need to lock them up, then that's what we need to do. But it's going to take more than law enforcement simply going out and arresting them. And we got to get into the courts. We have to get them rehabilitated.
Well, if we don't do something, they will strip us bare. And then we will not be able to grow food. And if we're not able to grow food, we won't be able to eat unless we pay big bucks for some other country to do it for us. So this appears to be a genuine issue. Sergeant Mike Chapman, Fresno County Ag Task Force, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in to the Food Chain Radio program. I want you to all remember, cheap food isn't. And this is a good case in point. Thank you, Sergeant.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.